relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
If you like America First, then check out our separate podcast, The Battle for 1600, with my former White House colleague, Boris Epstein. Every week, we give you the inside, in-depth analysis of what's really going on. The Battle for 1600. Subscribe today.
You're listening to America First with Sebastian Gorka, former strategist to President Donald J. Trump.
President Biden's predecessor is going to return to his campaign-style rallies in Ohio this coming weekend. Has anyone from the administration reached out to Governor DeWine or anyone in Ohio's government about the possibility of violence resulting from his return to the trail? And is there any concern him going back out there and continuing to insist that the election is fraudulent and that he actually won could result in people being hurt or killed?
Obviously, we take the rhetoric of the former guy, as we like to say, quite seriously.
The former guy? Well, first things first, that's a member of the White House press corps saying President Biden's predecessor. He has a name, and then to have Jen Psaki say of the 45th president of the United States, Donald J. Trump, that guy, the former guy, I'm at a loss for words, which isn't good when you're a radio host. Let's ask somebody who I know has an opinion. He is the author of Donald J. Trump, A President Like No Other and the Restoring of America. Lord Conrad Black, welcome back to America First.
Thank you, Sebastian. Always a pleasure.
That former guy? Has a press secretary ever said that from the podium of the White House? I'm trying to recall.
Remember, that phrase could mean Washington or Lincoln or Franklin D. Roosevelt. She didn't say the immediately former guy.
No.
But no, it's a typical of the insolence with which the whole Democratic and media, which are essentially coextensive apparatus, disparages the ex-president. But that's all they've got. All they've got is mouthing solidarity with the woke movement, no matter how extreme, dishonest, or in fact prone to incitements to violence and racism they may be, and disparagements of the former guy. That's the entire Democratic program. And that's what they do instead of noticing that they are about to be completely overwhelmed, like people wading in shallow water with a tsunami about 100 feet from them and approaching at 80 miles an hour. They are about to be overwhelmed by inflation, illegal immigration, and the crime rate. And, you know, mindless of their fate, the little children talk about the former guy.
And to use their terminology, this idea, Lord Black, that the current guy, is he concerned about violence breaking out at the president's rallies? Your reaction?
Well, if he is, his solicitude is touching, but not entirely believable. Where was he all last summer when Democratic mayors were defunding their police forces while peaceful protests were burning half of America down?
Yeah.
Injuring 700 policemen as they were being demobilized for lack of funding. I mean, where was he then?
Yeah. Well, let's move on from the press corps. Let's talk about what's happening across America almost every single day. Well, no, it is. It has been for the last 2 weeks. Every single day there is a new piece of audio or a new video of not members of the quote-unquote Beltway elite, but mothers, teachers, even young students standing up at public meetings, at school board assemblies, and calling out the indoctrination, the materials used under the so-called critical race theory to brainwash people into believing that skin color determines one's views. Do you think that this is a signal of something larger? Are the American people finally waking up to the long march through the institutions?
Yes, I think they are, and I think it is. It was predictable that they would, and I believe you and I were among the many who did predict it. I mean, the fact is, the teaching, whether of young people, elementary school students or members of the armed forces, that implicitly the United States has been an evil slaveholding proposition and is a racially inferior in its attitudes society and a racially unjust society profoundly and throughout the entire governmental and social system of the country. All of that is nonsense. 90% at least of Americans think it's nonsense. And any country that has even vestiges of democracy, where 90% of the people are against something, what they're against is simply not going to be tolerated.
But it is surprising, is it not, Conrad, that there is a paucity, a lack of numbers amongst those who have the letter R behind their name. There's a handful. Mo Brooks is one of them. But there are very few national politicians who are picking up this issue of critical race theory and indoctrination. You would think that with elections just around the corner, this would become a political subject as well as just one at local school boards.
I think it's coming now. You imply that you're surprised, and so am I, that we don't hear more of it.
Yes.
We do hear a fair bit of it from some of the Republican leaders, but it's coming. But the real takeaway on the last, just taking, say, the last month, is as the regime slides into the real perils of completely uncontrolled illegal entry in the South in stupefying numbers, and inflation really torquing up, and the crime rate out of control as we get into the summer and out of COVID, so people are much more out of doors and prone to be victims of crime. The takeaway is they're clinging like drowning people to a raft to the racist nonsense and the Trump bogey. Trump, it's just not credible. I mean, Trump is in the news occasionally, and sensibly, unexceptionably, and it just won't fly. I mean, with crime rates where they are and all the other problems that I mentioned, and, frankly, I think the administration is striking out in almost every area. But with all of that going on, sitting there mumbling a mantra about Trump, like Victorian elocution school students saying C-A-T spells cat, a sort of catechism, then it's not going to fly. The wheels are coming off in all four directions.
And to that point, the idea that somebody who is, he's not a sympathetic character, but he is deemed to be one of the greatest fundraisers and Democrat operators out there, who's now running to replace Ralph Northam as the governor of Virginia. When you have Terry McAuliffe, we used the audio just last week, actually say at a public meeting that critical race theory is an invention, a conspiracy that was concocted by none other than Donald Trump and his adversary Glenn Youngkin for the governorship of Virginia. Isn't that an indicator of a certain desperation on the left?
Desperation and obsolescence. Terry McAuliffe, I don't know him well, but I've met him. He is one of the most obnoxious people I've ever met. And you can see it as a public person. He's a blowhard and he's full of himself. And he, I don't think he can lie straight in bed. And that's an example of it. And how he was elected in the first place when he ran, I think, three times ago, two or three times ago. I don't know. I don't know how he did it.
But this ludicrous idea that Donald Trump is sitting down somewhere in a smoke-filled room with Glenn Youngkin and they are concocting critical race theory, that really shows a certain level of desperation, doesn't it?
Sebastian, I was in Mar-a-Lago and this is Post owned it, and I've been in it since the former president has owned it. The ceilings are 20 feet tall. And if it's a smoke-filled room in Mar-a-Lago, there's a hell of a lot of smoking going on. Call the fire department.
Well, he doesn't smoke. He doesn't drink alcohol. I haven't even seen him drink coffee.
No, but I take your point. Look, to me, Youngkin is a very, leaving partisanship out of it, he's a very well-spoken, contemporary, credible, attractive candidate, and McAuliffe, I guess, leaving out the fact that when I had met him, which is only twice, I found him. I mean, he wasn't particularly offensive to me. I just found him an obnoxious person, and I've had the same view when I've seen him on television. But leaving all that out of it, I mean, Youngkin looks like today, and McAuliffe looks like some as he is hack from the Clinton era.
Yeah,
and I don't mean Hillary. I mean Bill. I mean 25 years ago.
The most charitable word I think we can use for Mr. McAuliffe is oleaginous. We are talking to Lord Conrad Black,
author. That's when he's on his best day.
That's on a good day. That's on
a windbag.
That's on his good days. A president like no other, Donald J. Trump and the restoring of America. We're going to discuss his latest piece from American Greatness, one of our favorite websites. In the meantime, follow him at Conrad M. Black on Twitter. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First on the Salem Radio Network, coming to you from just outside the insalubrious, fetid, and rancid swamp that is Washington, D.C. Relief Factor, if you're in pain and have given up, don't give up. There is hope. Trust me. There is a product that is 100% drug-free that attacks the source of the pain, which is the inflammation. It is working for me and tens of thousands of Americans across the country who likewise thought that that's it. It's never going to get relief, but they are every single day. See their incredible testimonials at relieffactor.com. Testimonials like Yvonne from California. Both my husband and I are in our 70s. And are so grateful to have found Relief Factor. We tried so many other solutions, but none of them have given us the freedom of being pain-free like Relief Factor. Powerful, powerful words. Pain-free! That could be you. That should be you. But there's only one way to find out. Order the 3-week quick starter pack at relieffactor.com. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening just like I do. And I promise you, Dr. G's guarantee, by the end of those 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you like it works for me, Yvonne, and thousands of your fellow Americans. What have you got to lose except the pain? Doesn't that make it worth it already? Of course it does. Call 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com.
The administration has in place to make sure that the children of top officials don't get preferential treatment in hiring?
Sure. Well, let me say first that we have the highest ethical standards of any administration in history. A number of ethics officials have conveyed that, and we're proud of that.
I have the best radio show in radio history, according to my employees. It is a fact. That was Jen Psaki from the podium of the White House saying they are the most ethical administration in American history, according to ethics officials of the Biden administration. We are talking to Lord Conrad Black. He is the co-host with our good friend Victor Davis Hanson and Bill Bennett of the Sense and Intelligence podcast. Subscribe today. Lord Black, I'm just going to ask you for your reaction to that wonderful video clip.
Well, just asinine in its conceit and inaccuracy. I mean, who is this, you know, this person? I mean, I know what her position is, but who is she and what confers upon her the ability to weigh up in her own mind the ethical performance of the previous 44 occupants of that position? I know he's the 46, but that's only because Grover Cleveland and the executive terms.
Right.
But weigh them all up, all of them, and say, well, after 5 months, we're the most ethical. And it's a pretty galling thing to do when there's a serious investigation going on of whether the election was fairly won. There's a serious investigation, or ostensibly so, of the relationship between the president, his son, and certain foreign governments, morally and ethically devious and dubious foreign governments. And, you know, I'm not throwing muck at the Bidens. I hope it is an ethical administration. But she has no standing to say that. What the hell does she know about it?
That is
comparing it to. I mean, well, was there anything unethical about George Washington's administration? Not that I've ever heard of. He didn't even take a salary.
Indeed. Like Donald Trump, who also gave his salary back to the taxpayers.
And John F. Kennedy and Herbert Hoover. Those were the four.
Of course, he brings us the historical perspective, the presidential historian that he is. Follow him, Lord Conrad Black, on Twitter, Conrad M. Black. Your latest piece is entitled China's COVID Coup. It's at AmericanGreatnessAmGreatness.com. We are posting it right now on our Twitter and Facebook pages. And just the first sentence is striking. China deserves credit for a remarkable feat of strategic improvisation. Thank you. In translating a public health crisis into a large economical and geopolitical advance at the expense of the West. Please expand on how they brought strategic advantage out of tragedy.
Well, I think the probabilities are, Sebastian, that the virus was created in the Wuhan laboratory. And it, by mistake, not by design, escaped. So they realized quite quickly, I mean, certainly way ahead of any other country, the proportions of what they were dealing with. They dealt with it within China with extreme severity. They did absolutely nothing to warn the world about what was happening. People piling onto airliners and all of the major cities of China and flying out all over the world, inevitably taking this with them. It was bound to happen, and the authorities in China knew that. Then, when they couldn't contain it, the news of it any longer, they masqueraded as being the world model in efficiency containing it, and lied about the numbers. Even to this day, they only claim a few thousand people died in all of the People's Republic. And when in fact they resorted to totalitarian measures, and then the West went to lockdown. The Chinese got the pat on the back from their puppets at the World Health Organization, for whom the United States was paying, and they quickly got over it and exploited it in economic breakthroughs and made a major advance in narrowing the economic gap in size of economy between China and the United States, and we've had the scandalous situation in the United States of the Democratic Party allying itself with the virus and promoting the panic generated by the Democratic media, and China has profited from it entirely. It's been a huge gain for them, and after the illness got out there, they didn't lose any more lives within China than they would have if they'd been completely straight about it and been the good citizens of the world they pretended to be.
So
and
what
warned everyone of what was coming.
So Lord Black, as an incredibly successful businessman, former media mogul, financier today, what should decent countries like Canada, like the United States, what should our relationship be, not just diplomatic, but in trade, in business relations, with a nation that still has not only a one-party state, but labor camps? What is the right way to treat China, especially after COVID?
Well, it's too important a country to try and ignore it. And up to a point, we have to accept that each country in the world is entitled to govern itself however it wishes, whether it actually consults the population or merely as a regime that has by some means emerged as the indubitably governing entity within that country. So we have to accept some of that. I'm not sure that the Chinese, it's been completely outrageous what they've done, obviously, the treatment of the Uyghurs, the treatment of the Tibetans, the treatment of all genuine religions. I'm not talking about these ludicrous front organizations that the Communist Party of the People's Republic has set up, the Patriotic Catholic Association, which the late Saint John Paul II excommunicated all of them. With good reason. I mean, I'm no canon lawyer, but I wouldn't dispute his grounds for doing it. We have to put up with some of that and the violation of the Hong Kong Treaty. But I think this business about COVID is something else again. And I think the United States should join with other countries like-minded and similarly damaged by the negligence and malice and dishonesty of the Chinese government to require a genuine accounting by China of what really went on, and in the very slight likelihood that we would get it, we could take it from there. But if they stonewall us, continue to stonewall us, and it's not going to be like falling off the log, Sebastian, to get Germany in the line for once, since they, you know all about Central Europe. They're hearing the forest murmurs, and Angela Merkel on her way out thinks that she has some role as an intermediary between West and China. It's a complete delusion. But the United States and like-minded countries should try and get as solid a front as they can and demand that of China. And if they don't show some level of compliance, the objective not being to humiliate China, but to require civilized behavior from them on this issue, which originated in China, was negligently or maliciously managed by the Chinese government, and has caused the death of millions of people all around the world and huge economic damage. If they don't do that, then we should, if they don't show a reasonable, civilized level of cooperation, then we should try and organize a regime of sanctions.
There must be consequences for China's deadliest export. The article is China's COVID coup from the co-host of the podcast Sense and Intelligence, Lord Conrad Black. Whether it's the regular Hellcat or whether it's the compensated RDP with that miniature red dot, I love them all. How did it take so long to invent a factory compensated subcompact 9mm? Well, guess what? Springfield did it, and I'm a huge fan, and I'm Sebastian Gorka.
The Hellcat from Springfield Armory is still the smallest, highest capacity micro compact in the world. Available in standard or optics-ready configurations, the class-leading capacity of the Hellcat gives you 11+1 with the standard magazine, 13+1 with the included extended mag. The definitive concealed carry pistol is here. The Hellcat from Springfield Armory gives you the capacity to defend.
Good things must come to an end, and that starts as early as tomorrow morning with showers moving in around 8 a.m. And speaking of a brand new week, I will be sitting down this week with Project Veritas to discuss the discrimination that CBS is enforcing upon its employees. Tune in to Project Veritas for my full story.
That's kind of cheeky, isn't it, when you're on CBS saying, tune in to somebody else, and I'm working for CBS. How many of these are we going to see? It was that lady talking about air conditioners a week ago who was fired on that Fox affiliate. Now it's CBS saying there is censorship, and I've spoken to Veritas, Project Veritas. Good job, guys. Good job. It means they don't control their own employees anymore, and the truth will out. I have meant to cover a topic for a day now, and I haven't. And it's important to me because I'm a mackerel snapper. What does that mean? I'm a cradle Catholic. And I have somebody else on my team who is, yes, indeed, that dangerous papist. Shadrach, are you there?
I'm right here.
Is the Catholic Church finding its spine finally? Is Biden going to be, not excommunicated for being a supporter of abortion like he should, but at least barred from receiving communion? Can you give me an update?
So for those of you who don't know or don't follow this particular news, other like Fox and a lot of other mainline sources were talking about it. The USCCB, the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops.
Slow down. Go down again.
United States Conference of Catholic Bishops.
Yes.
Met last Friday and after several hours of debate decided to just draft a document that will explain the Catholic position on communion or the Eucharist.
Is that a cop out? You emphasized draft there, Shad.
Exactly. So it's been getting a lot of news and a lot of headlines, but in all actuality, the actual content of it has not been decided on. So a lot of the more liberal bishops were upset about the mere idea of writing it. It ended up getting passed with about 75% approval, so they were a small minority.
The concept of drafting.
The concept of drafting. So they claim that it will contain a special section about the position of the church on people who are supporting against social teaching.
But hang on.
Yeah.
Bishop Gorka wants to say something. We don't need that. We know. Yeah. A, if you're not in a state of grace, and B, if you support things that are intrinsically evil, which is, the church is very clear, abortion can never be evil. What is there to draft? Is that a dumb question, Shad?
So you would be surprised, because a lot of people in the 1970s and a lot of people in like Biden circles and more culturally Catholic areas were not taught properly, right? And a great example of this is after that vote was made, all of the Catholics in the House of Representatives who consider themselves Democrats wrote a letter to the Conference of Catholic Bishops saying specifically, we don't agree with you, right? We're going to keep doing what we're going to do. We're going to keep supporting abortion. But the thing that they said specifically was conscience. We know that the church teaches this is wrong, but our conscience says otherwise. Now, for people who don't know much about the history of the Catholic Church in America, back when Vatican II happened in the 1970s, a lot of people took the documents, misread them, and did a lot of really bad, you know, liturgical.
You have to bring up Vatican II and ruin my day.
I know.
You?
I'm sorry. But after that happened, there were some people who were firmly convinced that your conscience
overrides
actual doctrine, which isn't true. It's never been held by the church. But a lot of people in cultural circles, like these Democrats, believe that.
Well, this is the line you get from politicians that my private stance and my public stance. Yeah. No. There's one stance in your church.
Well, if we go way back in time, Biden wouldn't even go that far.
Right.
In the vice presidential debate between him and Paul Ryan, I think it was, he got asked about this specific issue, and he said, not only do I say this, I don't believe it, period, right? Despite the fact that the church teaches it, right? And so we'll see how the actual drafting of the document goes. I mean, 75% of the bishops said yes, which is a strong indication. I mean, a lot of people will claim that there's like really strong, more liberal theological forces in the church. When it comes to actual people in power with a vast majority, that's not really the case.
So what's your prediction as somebody who understands the theology and the rights and wrongs?
My prediction is that they wrote the same document in 2006. This already happened in 2006. And they're going to say the exact same thing.
They
have no power to enforce it technically, but that if you do advocate for that publicly, you should not be receiving communion.
Right. That's it.
And that's what's going to happen.
Yeah. Thank you. If I'm a bishop, does that make him an archbishop? I don't know. Or am I a cardinal? Not yet. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First on the Salem Radio Network, coming to you from the ReliefFactor.com studios.
Speaker Pelosi and Senator Schumer call it, I think, the For the People Act, but I think it'd be more aptly described as Screw the People Act. It will make it much easier to cheat in an election.
That's H.R. 1 and the Senate equivalent. Yes, indeed, Senator Kennedy always brings that witty phrase to the interview, but he's right. It is about the American people losing their rights and the federalization of our elections, a massive threat to our republic. Let's talk about other threats to the republic. I love this title. She is the culture editor of The Federalist, Emily Yashinsky. Welcome back to America First.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
So one of, I think, of the last year, forget the masks and the insanity and everything else and the draconian governors shutting down businesses with no repercussions for them politically. I think the biggest story, or the biggest untold story, Emily, is one that you wrote about. And you called it the tyranny of jargon. And that is the injection of politics and ideology into science, especially medical science. We're going to post your article right now, but share with our millions of listeners and viewers right now just what you found and how bad it has become.
Yeah, absolutely. That piece was written in direct response to a report that was diving into, it was by Katie Herzog, diving into how badly that sort of culture of intimidation, where you're either a total progressive or you're a bigot, you know, just one or the other, has intimidated doctors out of actually doing necessary research and providing necessary medical care in some cases. It's a really startling report. When you start to think about this, it's so easy to get caught up in abstract conversations about what is, you know, sex and race and gender, but these are having really immediate consequences. The jargon that the left has imposed, the elite left has imposed across all of these industries in our country, is having like very, very real consequences. They're not abstract anymore. They're very, very immediate. And it's a total tyranny, because if you try to push back, you're labeled a bigot. And that's actually, to see that affecting doctors, where this should be free, where free inquiry and expression should be paramount and is so essential to providing the best care, it's really terrifying, you know, the trajectory that we're going.
Can you give us some concrete examples of what this report talks about or things that you've uncovered?
Yeah, a great example would be emergency rooms. So there was a local bill or a local push to ban police officers from emergency rooms. And one of the doctors interviewed in Katie Herzog's report said, listen, if we did that, here's an example. Just a couple weeks ago, a gang members busted into the ER to finish the job on a guy who was being treated for a gunshot wound. If the police weren't there, that person would have died. And so when they weaponize their jargon to say that you're a racist, if you disagree with their idea of purging emergency rooms of police, there are literally life-threatening consequences. And you can see how on a local level, it'd be difficult for somebody to stand up against that and to say, well, I don't really want to risk being called a racist, but this will kill people. And the doctors were saying they just don't see the benefit in speaking up anymore because they'll lose their jobs.
Yeah. And the same goes for the medicines that were recommended for use with the coronavirus that were politically censored. Why? Because President Trump was in favor of them. Medicines blacklisted by governors simply for political purposes. We're talking to the culture editor of The Federalist. Follow them at FDRLST, Federalist. And she's Emily Yashinsky. That's Jashinsky. Let's talk about the good news, what we have witnessed almost every day in the last few weeks, and that is American people, not pundits, not show hosts, not politicians, but mothers, teachers, and students standing up to critical race theory. I don't want to be, you know, rose-tinted about this, but there seems to be a true groundswell and story after story. Is that what you're seeing as well in terms of pushback?
Yeah, absolutely. And the left is actually already noticing it, too, because they're doing their usual work of labeling it an astroturf sort of effect of the vast right-wing conspiracy. But these videos, these viral videos and these local news reports really speak for themselves. There's this very apolitical swell of opposition to critical race theory in particular that we've seen. I think that speaks to the endurance of common sense, especially on the local level where there's more goodwill in community so that people feel comfortable speaking up and saying they don't like something. So there is good reason as we're heading into the 4th of July holiday soon to actually feel really good about the fact that people are still feeling comfortable enough to stand up and say, racism framed as anti-racism is still racism, and I'm not going to be intimidated out of saying you can't teach my child this. And so it's actually been a very heartening trend. You see how powerful it is just by the fact that the left is trying to label it AstroTurf unsuccessfully. And you see it also on the issue of trans ideology in women's sports. I mean, you have these groups that are apolitical in blue states like Connecticut that are resisting this crazy anti-common sense policies. And I do think that speaks to the fact that it, in some sense, it's a race against the clock, right? You know, before tech totally closes the doors to free expression, can we still have these conversations? But it does speak to the fact that on the local level, people are fighting back and they are comfortable doing it. And that resistance is really real. And that's a super positive thing.
And not only that, it's actually leading to results. The breaking news that in New Jersey, that school board has reversed their decision and they are not deleting the names of our national holidays. That took a week, just a week for the pushback, but they won. Do you expect more reversals like that, Emily?
Yeah, I do. And that's a great example. I do, because on the local level, again, where these things aren't so nationalized and politically charged and people have more goodwill built up and they can have freer conversations, then you will see common sense does prevail, because so much of what the left is bulldozing through our culture is not common sense. It's postmodern nonsense and moral relativism. And so common sense is not political. It's totally apolitical. And so I do think it'll prevail so long as, you know, it's able to, that fight is happening fast enough.
Postmodern nonsense. A perfect description. The article is The Tyranny of Jargon, How Elite Leftism is Killing Efficiency and Risking Lives. We are posting it now on our Twitter and Facebook pages. Follow this lady, Emily Jashinsky, Jashinsky. She is the culture editor for our friends at The Federalist. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. Your call's next on 833-33-GORKA, 833-334-6752. What would you do if you're a man, if you're a father, if you're a grandfather? What would you do if you couldn't feed your family, not because you were made unemployed or you didn't have enough money to buy food, but if there wasn't any food at the local grocery? It's not out of the question. We've seen cyber attacks that completely stopped the supply of gas to 43% of the eastern seaboard. What if it happens with our food supply next? The food chain supply is incredibly fragile. Most grocery stores have only 3 days of food in the back. Would you be ready? Well, you can be. If you go with My Patriot Supply, the people I trust. The best name, the biggest name in long-term storage for food that will last for 25 years. Your one-month pack of food, you will get $50 off right now if you use my name. Don't be caught unprepared. Always be able to feed your family, your children, your loved ones. Go to preparewithgorka.com right now. That's preparewithgorka.com. Always be a provider.
A man, a legend, a legal immigrant, Dr. Sebastian Gorka.
Don't be Maxine Waters. Start the day right. Get a good night's sleep. I bet she'd be a nicer person if she rested her head on one of Mike Lindell's pillows. No, probably not. But you can be. Avoid that crick in the neck. Avoid that pillow that always loses its shape and gets hot half an hour in. Get one of the amazing pillows guaranteed for 10 years that never gets hot, never loses its shape. MyPillow.com, promo code G-O-R-K-A for up to 66% off Mike's amazing products. Call them 800-829-8468. From the MyPillow to the Egyptian cotton Giza dream sheets, the pajamas, the sheepskin slippers, the body pillows, the travel pillows, the towels that are soft from day one to day 100. An amazing line. And guess what? It's an American company, American products, and he's a patriot. MyPillow.com, promo code G-O-R-K-A. Call 800-829-8468. MyPillow.com, promo code G-O-R-K-A. Do it. You won't regret it. Let's go to your calls, Tom in Atlanta. Line one. Welcome, Tom.
Hey, hope you all are doing okay. I'm really looking forward to Independence Day. In the issue of I'm looking at this as sort of quality control from now on. My calls and my activities to my legislators and stuff. And one thing I think that would really impact China is a boycott of the Olympics.
I'm kind of torn on this. I'm really torn on this. Originally, I thought, yeah, good idea. At the weekend, I saw somebody say it's pointless. And, you know, Tom, I think it's pointless. I think it's virtue signaling. They've got bloody slave labor camps. So what if we boycott the Olympics? What difference does that really make? We know they're communists. It's not going to hurt them.
Well, I think it would hurt their image quite a bit.
What do you mean? It's a communist dictatorship with slave labor camps.
Yes, but having the debate in open across the world and bringing up all the issues and all the harm and all the things that Lord Conrad Black was just talking about, this is a gateway.
But they won't. They won't. Do you think CNN and the New York Times is going to talk about Nike slave labor trainers?
No, but we can.
Well, we do that every day, but what difference does it make if we boycott the Olympics or not? What real difference does it make, Tom?
Okay, let's do an MLB then. Let's do an MLB. Let's move the Olympics.
Well, that's not up to us. That's the International Olympics Commission.
Well, but if enough countries said we cannot, in good faith, in good conscience, support this, we want it somewhere else, maybe have to delay it a year, but...
Yeah. You will. You'll have to delay 2 years, probably. I don't know. I'm going to think on it a little bit more. But you got me thinking, Tom, and I appreciate it. And I didn't play you that cut of Maxine Waters, but we'll scare you in the next hour. Here on America First on the Salem Radio Network, coming to you from the ReFactor.com studios. Stay on this channel.